Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
There's all sorts of things to say about cryptocurrency and what's going on right now. Of course, nobody really understands why the value of Bitcoin plummeted almost 20%, I think.
And anyone who claims to, I just write off as ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you can identify, okay, well, this is a contributing factor. But anyone who's like, oh, this is the reason why this happened, no one knows. And no one knows what it's going to do next. Although, based on historical trends, I'm still saying that we're likely to see extreme gains in December and January.
I sure hope so. I mean, that would be nice.
I mean, that tends to be how this goes during the winter months.
Tends to, but there's no guarantees that old patterns are going to continue to repeat themselves. And you're referencing the fact that both you and I are prohibited from actually using cryptocurrency under some ridiculous bail conditions in the Crypto 6 case. You can learn more about that at thecrypto6.com. But I still find myself absolutely transfixed and fascinated by what goes on in the crypto world. There's always so many really interesting developments and exciting things happening out there. And the governments are sweating.
Absolutely.
And that is fun to watch.
I mean, I can't use cryptocurrency or access cryptocurrency or engage with it in any meaningful sense, right?
Right.
But I can watch it from a distance. And I love what I'm seeing.
And I know that a lot of my friends are, deep within that world, and they're doing everything they can to advance cryptocurrency acceptance and the technology behind it. The government gang wants to be involved. They really want to regulate. They really want to control this particular area. And they're doing their damnedest to try.
Yeah, but since 2009, 2010 or so, that ship has long sailed. It's way beyond the reach of governments at this point.
Well, they're doing their best. I mean, they are cracking down on exchanges and individuals. And they want to go after stable coins now as well. So anybody that's got a centralized location inside the United States or in any other governmental zone, the European Union or whatever, look out, because these guys are after you. They understand that you're a threat. They've woken up now. Okay, so it used to be, in the early days, it was like, oh, crypto, what's that? Oh, they're just buying drugs with it online. Well, we'll just arrest the drug website operators and put them in prison for two life sentences and plus 40 years, or one of them. They haven't done that to any of the other ones. I'm not saying they should, but poor Ross Ulbricht is going to spend the rest of his life in prison unless he gets a pardon or a commutation from Joe Biden. That seems highly unlikely, although I still hope for the best.
But with his VP being Kamala Harris, it's not extremely likely.
Well, with Joe Biden being one of the worst arch drug warriors in the U.S. history. I mean, I think he's written some of the drug war, worst of the worst legislation. So
he was at least in the Senate when it happened. I mean, he created the drug war. He at least played a role in its creation. The latest is that the fringe theory that cryptocurrency and Bitcoin were created by the CIA is making rounds again, as the CIA director William Burns said on Monday that the intelligence agency, quote, has a number of different projects focused on cryptocurrency, which could mean anything. Burns made his comments at the tail end of a talk at the Wall Street Journal CEO Summit. Interesting place for the director of the CIA to be. After discussing everything from the possible Russian invasion of Ukraine to the challenges of space, someone in the audience asked if the agency is on top of cryptocurrencies, which are currently at the center of the ransomware epidemic. Oh, man. Just hearing that phrase makes me so glad I don't do IT anymore.
Ransomware?
Yeah. I do not miss dealing with it. And it's so easy to prevent from being a problem that people just don't do it. Like, all you have to do is back up your stuff, and trying to convince a client that it's necessary to do this so they don't get hit with ransomware is impossible until they get hit with ransomware.
It'll never happen here.
Right. But it will, inevitably. And U.S. officials are attempting to get a handle on the ransomware epidemic. This is the first I've heard about that. And snap it out. Here's what Burns said. This is something I inherited. My predecessor had started this, but had set in motion a number of different projects focused on cryptocurrency and trying to look at second and third order consequences as well. I don't know what that means.
Me neither.
If it came out and was proven that Bitcoin was created by the CIA, it wouldn't significantly diminish my bullishness, said Spencer Schiff, who is a Bitcoin promoter.
This is the son of Peter Schiff.
Yes, evidently they were having a spat on Twitter in the last recent few days.
Yeah.
It's hard to say if it's just for show or if it's just them trying to play both sides or if it's just, you know, a rebellious son being like, hey, no, look, you're old and you're wrong here.
Yep, you're wrong, Dad.
Yeah, let's move on. The only thing it would change is my view of Satoshi, but crucially, Satoshi is not Bitcoin. That connection was severed years ago. He's right on that, although I would say that it would alter my view of Bitcoin. Despite it being open source, I don't have the technical expertise by a long shot to dive into the code and figure out whether or not there are back doors.
But the reality is Bitcoin is one of the, maybe the most reviewed code on the planet. I mean, just think about it. Like, there's literally, what is it, $1 trillion now in market cap for Bitcoin? I'll pull up the numbers here over at CoinGecko. Oh, no, not quite a trillion, because it did have that dip down. So $952 billion market
basically cap. Basically a trillion.
Just on this one cryptocurrency, there's a huge level of interest in making sure that Bitcoin is what it says it is and that there are no back doors, there's no funny business going on in there, and there's not.
I've always known him as rich, so I've always called him rich. And yeah. I've never really had any issue with that because he didn't either. But I'm happy to know that I can now call him Rich Paul and it will at least have some association with him. I didn't realize that he got a trade name as Rich Paul. I thought he changed his name back. The trade name thing makes it so much funnier.
It is fun.
So anyway, he's not allowed to be on the air with us at the moment, but Bonnie has been going through some old videos that contain him digging out quotable things that he has said in the past, and I like this one a whole lot. Skyrim is a game? I always thought it was like the third level of the Mal High Club. And I like that because I like the game Skyrim. I didn't realize, but it's almost a decade old at this point.
Yeah.
It's got one of the longest legacies, and I know that just makes Bethesda so angry.
What do you mean?
Well, they have this almost 10-year-old game that people are still playing religiously, and they're not making a dime from it.
Right, because that was back when that came out, it wasn't one of those. They didn't have that whole microtransaction thing in the gaming industry like they do now, where every single, I don't know if it's every game, I don't play games that much anymore, but where it seems like in a lot of games, they're trying to nickel and dime the players to the point where it's not just $60 to buy a game, it's $60 and then $5 here and $5 there and $10 here, and before you know it, you've spent $200 playing this $60 game. Most cryptocurrencies out there started with Bitcoin as their basis. They took the Bitcoin code and they changed something or a bunch of things, and then they put their own iteration out and they called it something different. So like Litecoin or Dash or, you know, you name a bunch of them, they probably are. There's probably more now that haven't done that than ever before, but Monero was one of the first to do it based on what's called CryptoNote, which is totally something like that was written from scratch. There's not like Bitcoin code in Monero, as I understand it. I'm not a programmer. That's just my understanding of the sort of the history of Monero. So it's interesting. And some people theorize that it was actually Satoshi Nakamoto who wrote Monero. And they base that on the fact that Monero's author is also anonymous. There's been some people who've sort of been the public face of Monero over the years, like a guy named Fluffy Pony, but he's just like a maintainer. He's just a programmer who's worked on the project. He wasn't the creator of it. And
allegedly, there are linguistic similarities between the two white papers.
That's what people say. Now, whether that was done on purpose and it wasn't actually Satoshi Nakamoto who wrote it, but it was somebody who wanted it to look like it was Satoshi Nakamoto, so therefore they adopted some of Satoshi's, you know, linguistics flair or whatever. Who knows?
I mean, the world will never know. That's the whole point. Like, Satoshi Nakamoto is anonymous. Bitcoin, not so much.
No, it's not.
A lot of families are going into debt. We talked about this last week. They're actively going into debt in order to buy slightly reduced amounts of Christmas gifts. I think last year or the year before, it was an average of
just over $1,000.
Yeah, and this year it's just under $1,000. So it's like slightly less, but not meaningfully so.
That's right.
I'm not into the whole, as we talked about then, the whole obligatory gift giving and receiving kind of thing.
If I see
something that that I think someone will like, I will just buy it for them because, hey, this is a person I like and this is a thing I think they will like.
And you don't have to wait until December to do that.
No, you can do it anytime.
Yeah.
Right. And it shows your friend, hey, this friend is thinking about me at a random time. That's great. Instead of, oh, this friend fulfilled their societal obligation to get me a pair of socks this year. Thanks, friend. But not everyone sees it that way. And despite the inflation that we're seeing throughout the world, many Americans are, despite being worried about it, they're still spending just massive amounts of money on this tradition.
Sure.
And it doesn't make any sense to me. Does it have any quotes, the article that you have, that enlightens us on what these people are thinking?
Well, Americans have not made a lot of sense financially for as long as we've been doing this show. I mean, we've talked for years about the tremendous debt loads and debt levels that Americans have. There's a lot of people who can cook really well that they, you know, get sick and tired of working for somebody. They're working at a restaurant. They're working their ass off all just so they can enrich the owner of the restaurant, right? Because whenever you work for a job, you're just working to make the owner of that company wealthier. And ultimately, that's not the best thing you can do for you. The best thing you could do for you would be to start your own thing. And
well, for a lot of people, I would suggest the best thing they could do for themselves is to work for themselves.
Yes, but the problem is the system isn't designed for that. So somebody's working in a restaurant for years and they figure, you know what, I'm going to strike out on my own. I can do this. I've learned the ropes. I know how to do this. I can open my own restaurant. Except because they've been living paycheck to paycheck, they don't have a whole lot of money, you know, that they can just go and rent some big building and then, you know, renovate it with whatever stuff that they need to renovate with. And, you know, before you know it, you're into $200,000, $300,000 just to open the doors on some sort of new restaurant. They could, if there were, like, freedom, they could just set up some tables and chairs in their dining room or their family room or whatever, and invite friends and neighbors and whatever. Hey, tonight we're going to be cooking, you know, jambalaya or, you know, you name it, whatever, and invite people over, have a menu, have a, you know, hours and that sort of thing.
I just wanted to comment about the student loans. I think there is part of it that is definitely somewhat of a scam in a way, trying to take advantage of people that are young and don't necessarily know what they want to do for their future and say, hey, you know, maybe you need education. And I don't fault the company for trying to loan them money, mm-hmm. but I think that people need to actually maybe take the time when they get out of high school to maybe learn a trade or a valuable skill and then maybe go back to school for something. But I feel like the thought of just going to school first.
Well, that's what we were taught our entire lives, right? The millennial generation, at least, we were told, oh, you don't want to be a trade worker. No, the only path is higher education. You have to go to college. You have to get a degree. No one ever mentioned learning a trade or anything like that. I don't know what it is for kids today.
It's the same.
But yeah, that's what we went through.
Well, the college system has a interest in doing this. It's a business, and sure, they have a very effective marketing strategy, which is to say they put their people in the government schools as teachers, right? People who've graduated from their institutions go to government school and work as teachers, and so they tell these kids the same story.
I really wish that, you know, students weren't being exposed to this propaganda their entire lives, but I don't know how to address that 18-year-old person who wants a loan, not because they really want a loan or because they feel like they belong in college, they should earn a PhD in whatever, but because they've been told their entire lives, propagandized and brainwashed, that the only way for them to be successful mm-hmm. is to take this path that involves these student loans.
Yeah, well, I feel bad for all of the poor suckers who believed the things the government told them.
Yeah, fair point. Anything the government says is a lie.
Most of the time.
And if it's
sure as hell can't trust them.
And if they actually tell the truth, it's just so that they can exploit it still for their own mm-hmm. benefit. But if they can't exploit the truth, they'll just tell a lie.
Yep. And there's no penalty for them.
No. And they've been doing that since time immemorial. And that's led to the situation that we're in now, where Americans have a problem on their hand. They're worried about inflation, mm-hmm. but they just, I don't know what this year's Tickle Me Elmo is, but they'll just be damned if they don't get their kids this year's Tickle Me Elmo.
Even if it costs three times as much. Yeah, and that is a good question, parents. What is the Tickle Me Elmo of the this particular year? For kids that don't know what we're talking about, in the late 1990s, Tickle Me Elmo was the hot toy. And somebody mentioned, you know, Cabbage Patch Kids from the 1980s. So, you know, every year or every few years, there's always some sort of Tamagotchi. I remember that one from the late 90s.
The Nintendo Wii was one for 1 year.
I just want to bring up that they just began to put a no smoking sign on each bus stop here in Albuquerque.
Well, they saw how effective they were at the hospital.
Well, I mean, but that's the whole point. But at least it's impressive because, it's like a stick, and they have this. It's about like six inches long, and it's like a little. It's a little sign.
It's a non-smoking sign.
Yeah.
What about
it? So that the thing is that you know that they're all going to ignore it. I'm calling in because it's comical. You know what I mean?
That's my point. It seems silly that they would do this considering how ineffective they were. Because just a few days ago, you called in about how people were ignoring the non-smoking signs at the hospital grounds. So why?
Right. But the whole point is that once people are aware, maybe they'll be more courteous.
Did that work at the hospital?
No, at the bus stop.
Okay, but did
they'll probably care.
Yeah, did that work at the hospital though?
No, it didn't.
Okay, so why would
it work
here?
The people at the bus stop are obviously of a higher caliber than those at the hospital, so they will care.
Last Saturday night in Albuquerque, it was caught on a person's home security camera that somebody stole his 20-foot Santa Claus, inflatable Santa Claus, that was part of his display in his front yard. The thieves were driving an SUV, and all this was caught on camera, and as the SUV drove off, there was quite a few feet of this inflatable 20-foot snowman that was showing out the back end of the SUV. So that's a little humor from...
I don't know if I think it's funny that somebody had their yard ornaments stolen. I mean, that's not very funny.
Now, if someone is going to put up lawn ornaments, so I would highly recommend a CCTV system. That's a closed circuit television system. Security cameras, basically, in a DVR. You can get a bundle of these on Amazon for like eight cameras
bucks.
For like $300 or $400. Yeah. It's simple to set up, and the cameras are super easy to mount. If you're going to invest your time and energy into setting up...
Well, it sounds like they do have footage, right? I mean, Richard, you were able to determine what the type of vehicle was, so there was security camera footage of this?
Yes, there was. Yeah, the man has a pretty nice, sized, expensive home, so he has an outdoor security camera system.
Have the crooks been caught?
Not yet.
They surveyed 1,031 adults, a group called Country Financial, back in October. 48% said they plan to reduce their spending on restaurant meals and takeout. And that's what we were just commenting on a few moments ago. You were trying to argue, Aria, that it's somehow cheaper to actually eat takeout. And in no case is it ever cheaper to eat takeout. I mean, it may be more convenient, and you could factor in that you don't have to do the dishes with takeout. So if your time is very compressed and very valuable, then you could argue it makes more sense to do that. But then you could also just, if you've got the kind of money to buy takeout, then you could also hire a private chef, probably, and what do they call them, a personal chef. And those can actually be surprisingly affordable from what I understand. The only reason I know this, I don't have a personal chef, but we used to have way back in the day, back on the original like local version of Free Talk Live before we got syndicated, we actually had a private chef or a personal chef as a kind of like a, it wasn't really a sponsor, but we would have every day of the week, we'd have like a restaurant bring us some food at the studio. And one of those 5 days a week that we were doing the show back then was a personal chef who would come in, and he'd like, you know, he'd cook something up at his house or whatever, and then he'd serve us some really awesome, like,
nice
chef-level food. 29% said they'll purchase less clothing. 20% are delaying or canceling travel plans, and 13% plan to drive less, which is something that you also see happen with rising gas prices, is people start to be more judicious about when and where they drive. So instead of going shopping every single day and making a trip out every single day, they might have a shopping day where they, you know, make a loop to, you know, Walmart and then the grocery store and then, you know, some local store or whatever, all in one trip. That way they're not out and back multiple days. And so people start to get smarter about their spending habits as prices start to rise.
Now imagine if these same people had been smart about their spending habits their entire lives.
Yes.
Instead of just when push came to shove, instead their entire lives, they were like, you know what? I don't really need to make 6 trips this week to the grocery stores and to Walmart and all that. I can just actually make 1 trip. And sure, it'll take me a little bit longer if I do this Sunday instead of doing it after work each day. You know, it becomes a 3-hour trip on a Sunday instead of a 20-minute trip 6 days a week or whatever.
Right.
But it's cheaper and it's more effective and it's more efficient.
Or packing a lunch at home instead of going out to eat while you're at work.
Next week, however, I will be flying, and according to this article, there have just been massive amounts of changes to the travel industry in the last year or two, and I just haven't seen it. It seems about the same as it's always been, but coming soon, they say, your face will be your boarding pass. Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose one of the changes I've seen was that I wasn't aware of the existence of digital boarding passes prior to my most recent flight, and I just used the paper ones.
Right.
And this one, I opted to just throw the paper ones down at the bottom of my purse and use the digital one instead, but the digital one still existed then, so that wasn't really a change. It was just, now I'm aware of this easier method of doing this.
Is it easier?
I found it easier. Well, you can lose a piece of paper, right?
Sure.
If you lose your phone, you're... in a world of hurt where catching the plane is the least of your worries, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it easier, but I don't know if easier is even the right word, because it's not like it's hard to take a sheet of paper with a QR code it and slap it down on their little scanner.
Yeah, I haven't done much traveling this year, but I have gone a few places in previous years. And it's always just easy for me to reach in my pocket, pull out a piece of paper, and then boom, I'm done. I don't have to unlock a phone. I don't have to,
well, there's
find
a difference
the program
here
or whatever.
And that I wear skirts, and skirts almost never have pockets. For whatever reason,
right.
The people who design skirts are like, they don't need pockets.
Right.
By default, though, if you're trans and you go through TSA, you are going to get felt up. If they hit the male button, then the hooks in your bra will set it off. Mm. If they hit the female button, then your anatomy will set it off.
Is that a thing? They have a button for different...
Yes.
Huh.
And no matter which one of those two they hit, if you're a trans person, one way or the other, you're going to get felt up.
See, I always get felt up, and that's because I opt out of the scanner.
I don't really mind the scanner, but at this point of flying, I'm like, I know I'm going to get felt up anyway, so can I just go straight to that line and let's get this
over
with?
Just say opt out. They'll put you right in that line. There's never a line.
No,
you just have to wait.
There was never been a lie that any instance that this happened. But it's also kind of funny to me to watch the TSA agents figure out how to
handle this.
Do this as delicately as possible. Because, they probably expect someone to start flipping out and videotaping the whole thing. And I'm just getting a kick out of it because it's funny. But always a good time. I wish they would invest in that instead of, this biometric nonsense.
Oh, but it seems like the airlines, just like the banks, like the airlines and the banks seem to be over the last 2 years, this COVID nonsense, the most government obedient of industries, right?
Oh, banks have been insufferable.
Yeah, all to the max, every single, CDC guideline being followed to the T.
Now, we were talking about the upcoming hellscape that is going to be facial recognition at airports, which sounds scary, but... realistically, I don't think technology is anywhere to that point. And I brought up how even your average, faucet and soap dispenser in public bathrooms, relatively simple but extremely common technology is not at a point where it's able to handle Black Americans versus white Americans. And so I looked up a bit into that, and I have an article about it that I really think is worth more discussing than whatever nonsense the government has planned in the future, because they've got all sorts of plans. They're the best plans, and absolutely nothing will go wrong, as always. But racist soap dispensers is what this headline is calling them. In public bathrooms are not giving up their soap for Black people, according to a viral YouTube video. The revelation could come as a relief for countless darker-skinned people who thought they were going mad or being ignored. An African-American guest at a sci-fi convention in Atlanta did a test at the Atlanta Marriott, along with his white friend, to prove the soap dispensers would not recognize dark skin. The two can be heard laughing throughout the video, which clocked 3 million views. He told tech website Mike, "I wasn't offended, but it was intriguing. Like, why is it not recognizing me?" So I'm not too worried about the government and their facial recognition system, but they're working on iris scanning. They've been touting it as the most foolproof. Yeah, absolutely not, man. For biometrics to work, you have to be able to match to a known trusted source of data because you're trying to compare it to a record on file. The face is the easiest because all the documents we use that prove your identity, driver's licenses, passports, etc., rely on face. And of course, they already have a picture of your face. That's why
they do.
That's why the TSA agent takes a look at your ID and then looks at you and they go, "Can you pull down your mask for me?" And you go, "Fine," because you got to get on your flight. Mm. So they already use this, but it's humans doing it, which I guess I'm less bothered by. It's never occurred to me to be concerned about handing someone my ID so they could verify that it's actually me. But that's different than logging that in a computer.
Well, they've been, by the way, you said you haven't done international travel, but the process of coming back into the United States is pretty invasive. They're not doing iris scans yet, but they are taking your photograph at some sort of like kiosk, basically. So as soon as you come back in, you land at whatever international airport in the United States, they shuffle you off the plane, you go through, you know, the tunnels or wherever it is, you finally get to this big room, and then there's a bunch of these kiosks, these sort of Orwellian techno kiosks that have cameras in them, and they take your picture and they print out a piece of paper with your photo on it.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.